went from overview, nuts and bolts, overview, I'd like to come back to nuts and bolts again. And mindfulness of breathing, so that kind of the nuts and bolts on kind of method, technique, and using breath meditation to encourage people in the development of this fundamental way of training and meditation that the Buddha laid out, certainly the most extensive teachings that the Buddha gives on meditation. And I'd like to do that. I mean, Ajahn Jeff has a chapter that I would, we'll see, begin with, and it sort of begins, sort of like skipping to chapter 6 and the structure of breath meditation. But before I begin that, I'd like to read the Anapanasati Sutta, the discourse that the Buddha gives on mindfulness of breathing. It's in the middle length discourses, Majjhima 118. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in the Eastern Park, in the palace of Megara's mother, together with many very well-known elder bhikkhus, the Venerable Sariputta, the Venerable Mahamoggallana, the Venerable Mahakasapa, the Venerable Mahakachana, the Venerable Mahakotita, the Venerable Mahakapina, the Venerable Mahachunda, the Venerable Anuruddha, the Venerable Revata, the Venerable Ananda, and other very well-known elder disciples. Now, on that occasion, elder bhikkhus had been teaching and instructing new bhikkhus. Some elder bhikkhus had been teaching and instructing 10 bhikkhus. Some elder bhikkhus had been teaching and instructing 20, 30, 40 bhikkhus. And the new bhikkhus taught and instructed by the elder bhikkhus had achieved successive stages of high distinction. On that occasion, the Uposatha day of the 15th, on the full moon night of the Pawarna ceremony, and it's the end of the rains retreat usually, the Blessed One was seated in the open surrounded by the Sangha bhikkhus. Then, surveying the silent Sangha bhikkhus, he addressed them thus, "Bhikkhus, I am content with this progress. My mind is content with this progress. So arouse still more energy to attain the unattained, to achieve the unachieved, to realize the unrealized. I shall wait here at Savatthi for the Kamuddhi full moon of the fourth month." So that what that means is that rather than normally at the end of the 3 months of the rainy season, that might be an occasion when the bhikkhus and the Buddha himself might go off other places, might go wandering, and what he's saying is, I'm going to stay here, and basically everybody else is going to stay here. So everybody will be here. The bhikkhus of the countryside heard, "The Blessed One will wait there at Savatthi for the Kamuddhi full month of the fourth month." And the bhikkhus of the countryside left in due course for Savatthi to see the Blessed One. And elder bhikkhus still more intensively taught and instructed new bhikkhus. Some elder bhikkhus taught and instructed 10 bhikkhus. Some elder bhikkhus taught and instructed 20, 30, 40 bhikkhus. And the new bhikkhus taught and instructed by the elder bhikkhus achieved successive stages of high distinction. On that occasion, the Uposatha day of the 15th, the full moon night of the Kamuddhi full moon of the fourth month, the Blessed One was seated in the open, surrounded by the Sangha bhikkhus. So a month has passed. Then, surveying the silent bhikkhu, a silent Sangha bhikkhus, he addressed them thus, "Bhikkhus, this assembly is free from prattle. This assembly is free from chatter. It consists purely of heartwood. Such is this Sangha bhikkhus. Such is this assembly. Such an assembly as is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, an incomparable field of merit for the world. Such is this Sangha Bhikkhus, such is this assembly. Such an assembly that a small gift given to it becomes great, and a great gift greater. Such is this Sangha Bhikkhus, such is this assembly. Such an assembly as is rare for the world to see. Such is this Sangha Bhikkhus, such is this assembly. Such an assembly as would be worth journeying many leagues with a travel bag to see. Such is this Sangha Bhikkhus, such is this assembly. In this Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who are arahants with taints destroyed, who have lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached their own goal, destroyed the fetters of being, and are completely liberated through final knowledge. Such bhikkhus are there in this Sangha Bhikkhus. In this Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, are due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana, without ever returning from that world. Such bhikkhus are there in the Sangha Bhikkhus. In this Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who, with the destruction of three fetters, and with the attenuation of lust, hate, and delusion, are once returners, returning once to this world to make an end of suffering. Such bhikkhus are there in the Sangha Bhikkhus. In this Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who, with the destruction of the three fetters, are stream enterers, no longer subject to perdition, bound for deliverance, headed for enlightenment. Such bhikkhus are there in the Sangha Bhikkhus. In the Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who abide devoted to the development of the four foundations of mindfulness. Such bhikkhus are there in the Sangha Bhikkhus. In the Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who abide devoted to the development of the four right kinds of striving, of the four bases for spiritual power, of the five faculties, of the five powers, of the seven enlightenment factors, of the Noble Eightfold Path. Such bhikkhus are there in the Sangha Bhikkhus. In the Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who abide devoted to the development of loving kindness, of compassion, of altruistic joy, of equanimity, of the meditation on the unattractive, of the perception of impermanence. Such bhikkhus are there in the Sangha Bhikkhus. In the Sangha Bhikkhus, there are bhikkhus who abide devoted to the development of mindfulness of breathing. Bhikkhus, when mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit and great benefit. When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. When the four foundations of mindfulness are developed and cultivated, they fulfill the seven enlightenment factors. When the seven enlightenment factors are developed and cultivated, they fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. And how, bhikkhus, is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it is of great benefit and great fruit? Here, a bhikkhu gone to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut sits down. Having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, and establish mindfulness in front of him. Ever mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out. Breathing in long, he understands. I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, he understands. I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he understands. I breathe out short. Breathing in short, he understands, I breathe in short, or breathing out short, he understands, I breathe out short. He trains thus, I shall breathe in experiencing the whole body of the breath. That's in brackets. He trains thus, I shall breathe out experiencing the whole body. And in brackets of the breath, that's in here. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing rapture. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing rapture. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing pleasure. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing pleasure. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mental formations. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, gladdening the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, gladdening the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, concentrating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, concentrating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, liberating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, liberating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating impermanence. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating impermanence. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating fading away. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating fading away. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating relinquishment. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating relinquishment. Because that is how mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, so that it is of great fruit and great benefit. And how, because this mindfulness of breathing, developed and cultivated, fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness? Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu breathing in long understands, I breathe in long, or breathing out long understands, I breathe out long, breathing in short understands, I breathe in short, or breathing out short understands, I breathe out short, trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body, trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body, trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. Trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides, contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. I say that this is a certain body among the bodies, namely, in-breathing and out-breathing. That is why, on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Because on whatever occasion a bhikkhu trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing rapture. Trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing rapture. Trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing pleasure. Trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing pleasure. Trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mental formation. Trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mental formation. Trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formation. Trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formation. Trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formation. I shall breathe out, experiencing the mental formation. Then I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formation. Trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formation. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides, contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. I say that this is a certain feeling among the feelings, namely, giving close attention to in-breathing and out-breathing. That is why, on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion, a bhikkhu trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind, trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mind, trains thus, I shall breathe in, gladdening the mind, trains thus, I shall breathe out, gladdening the mind, trains thus, I shall breathe in concentrating the mind, trains thus, I shall breathe out concentrating the mind. Trains thus, I shall breathe in liberating the mind, trains thus, I shall breathe out liberating the mind. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. I do not say that there is the development of mindfulness of breathing for one who is forgetful, who is not fully aware. That is why, on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu trains thus, I shall breathe in contemplating impermanence, trains thus, I shall breathe out contemplating impermanence, trains thus, I shall breathe in contemplating fading away, trains thus, I shall breathe out contemplating fading away, trains thus, I shall breathe in contemplating cessation, trains thus, I shall breathe out contemplating cessation, trains thus, I shall breathe in contemplating relinquishment, trains thus, I shall breathe out contemplating relinquishment. On that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Having seen with wisdom the abandoning of covetousness and grief, he closely looks on with equanimity. That is why, on that occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Bhikkhus, that is how mindfulness of breathing, developed and cultivated, fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. And how, bhikkhus, do the four foundations of mindfulness, developed and cultivated, fulfill the seven enlightenment factors? Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, on that occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in him. On whatever occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in a bhikkhu, on that occasion the mindfulness enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. Abiding thus mindful, he investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it. On whatever occasion, abiding thus mindful, a bhikkhu investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, on that occasion the investigation of states, enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. In one who investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, tireless energy is aroused. On whatever occasion tireless energy is aroused in a bhikkhu who investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, on that occasion the energy enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. In one who has aroused energy, unworldly rapture arises. On whatever occasion unworldly rapture arises in a bhikkhu who has aroused energy, on that occasion the rapture enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. In one who is rapturous, the body and the mind become tranquil. On whatever occasion the body and the mind become tranquil in a bhikkhu who is rapturous, on that occasion the tranquility enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. In one whose body is tranquil and who feels pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. On whatever occasion the mind becomes concentrated in a bhikkhu whose body is tranquil and who feels pleasure, on that occasion the concentration enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. He closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated. On whatever occasion, a bhikkhu closely looks on with equanimity at the mind thus concentrated, on that occasion, the equanimity enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development, it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, and the same for the foundation of mind, or it goes through the whole thing, actually, all the seven enlightenment factors, through this the base of feeling, the equanimity, enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops, and by development, it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, goes through all the enlightenment factors. The equanimity, enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development, it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion, a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Then all the seven factors of enlightenment aroused in him develops, and by development comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, that is how the four foundations of mindfulness developed and cultivated fulfill the seven enlightenment factors. And how, bhikkhus, do the seven enlightenment factors developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and deliverance? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the mindfulness enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the investigation of states enlightenment factor, Dhammavicaya, the energy enlightenment factor, the rapture enlightenment factor, the tranquility enlightenment factor, the concentration enlightenment factor, the equanimity enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. Because that is how the seven enlightenment factors developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Okay, that's enough to keep people busy for a while. those qualities that are supported, that are used in support of the enlightenment factors, viveka, viraka, nirodha, vosaka. Those come up in many places in the suttas as supporting factors or integral factors for cultivation of within practice. Yeah.
There was in like the kind of the last stanza of the 16, I'm not familiar with this translation, uses fading away and then also the cessation.
Fading away is an alternative translation of viraka, which can be also translated as dispassion. And so it's a, you'll see them alternating sometimes. But the Pali is viraka, so it's oftentimes dispassion. Cessation is nirodha, and there's not really that's a standard translation of nirodha. It's hard to translate it any other way, really.
It's not translated as stopping. Different from say then like arising and ceasing.
It is. What is it? Yeah, no, not really. Samudaya Dhamma, Nirodha Dhamma. It's slightly different.
Nirodha has, my understanding, has a little bit more of a connotation of like stopping for good.
Yeah.
Ceasing to a resting place and not arising again.
Uh-huh. So it's like, that's when you see the cessation of suffering is Nirodha. It has many actual nuances as well. It's a difficult one to translate into any language. Prapa Yuto complains that it's a difficult term to translate into Thai. I think a lot of it is just because of the assumptions that the human mind make. And then the nuances of Nirodha are because sometimes it's Nirodha is used in the most upset or also in the dependent origination sequence, so that there's the sort of its arising sequence and its cessation sequence, and he's saying that it can be, although it is the common translation or ordinary translation, it can also have the sense of it being, not being a problem. When ignorance is no longer a problem, then. And then samkaras are no longer a problem, so that it's as opposed to an absolute cessation.
You often use the word non-arising too as a contemplative tool.
Yes. Okay, apparently that's something I do.
Where I heard it.
Yes. Yeah, rather than cessation, when that non-arising is a really interesting way, because oftentimes when we're looking for something to, when we're looking for something to end, rather than looking for it not to arise, which is it takes a different perspective. And one holds it slightly differently.
I have a question on feeling.
Yeah.
Mindfulness of feeling.
Yes.
Sometimes, quite often, you have painful feeling.
Yeah.
That you're trying to forget, but then you keep coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you practice to have citta release it? And we'll be not suffering so much.
Well, that's where the Buddha points to. There's two feelings in the sense of there's a physical feeling and then a mental feeling. So in the sense that there's the physical feeling of pain that one feels and then the mental reaction to it. The pain is a mental feeling, but it's there's sort of like there's a painful sensation. And then the mind creates suffering around it. Doesn't like it, doesn't want it. So that some things we can't actually make go away. But we can not add to the emotional feeling of complication we tend to do. Because and then it can just be a simple, unpleasant sensation or a simple, painful sensation.
Okay. So it's like Bob was saying that just don't air, which means something like don't blame people, don't blame yourself.
All the whole spectrum of ways that we complicate and add to an experience. Because it's also a really helpful tool for investigating, what do I add? How do I relate to? How do I react to certain sensations? And the thing is, we notice it with painful because we don't want them. We do the same thing with pleasant. But because we're okay with pleasant sensation, then we don't notice that it's getting complicated. And, you know, on a certain level, it's even more complicated with neutral, because we have to find something to complicate it with. Well, it's just part of the investigation and kind of developing of the practice. Karina, you had a question?
Yeah, I was trying to understand that phrase, know the mind with as the mind, know feeling as feeling. It seems like it's what both the other two questions are talking about. It's like a relinquishing. So I'm trying to, is it about letting something go or about not picking something up?
Well, it's both, you know, both in the sense that whatever, you know, because sometimes all one needs to do is just, you know, not pick it up, and then that in itself is, say, like a non-arising when one doesn't pick it up. So that has an ending to it. But it does need to be, it needs to be contemplated, needs to be seen, needs to be understood, needs to be experienced, so that whether it's the mind, feeling, whatever. I mean, it's just that's where the four foundations of mindfulness are helpful in terms of seeing body as a body, seeing mind as mind, seeing feeling as feeling. Dhammas as dhammas, and then it's not adding to the different layers of how we tend to react and interpret experience. Yeah.
One of the same lines is oftentimes pointed out too is that this our selfing arises around the feeling. So, you know, like with the object and the sense sphere, you know, is contact, and then arises around that, and then feeling arises from that contact, and then, like, oftentimes the grammatical structure of the Pali will change to be like what a person or what one feels, one makes a problem out of this.
Identify
as a person who doesn't feel pain, it's a problem when you feel pain.
Right.
Watching all the self constructs in reaction to feeling.
Yeah, and that's where it's actually that first within the Anapanasati Sutta structure, that experiencing the mental formations, because it's that's where the, like, even before mind, because it's at the level of feeling, it's still quite basic. There's feeling, and because of what is called a citta sankhara in the mental formation is feeling and perception. So vedana and sanya. And it's through that, and sanya is the aspect of memory and association. So that feeling, memory, association, those are the building blocks of the movement of mind, the constructs of mind. So that by using feeling as a doorway or as a mirror for investigation, one could start to see the momentum of the mind starting to take shape, and so that it helps to come back and to recognize what that tendency, that habit is. And that's where it's experience, say from the Anapanasati Sutta, experiencing and then, say, settling or tranquilizing. So we just are making it peaceful.
Well, it's a matter of practice. It doesn't sound like Buddha is saying like all 16 modes of due practice, the 16 modes of the Anapanasati are supposed to be practiced, you know, simultaneously or anything like that.
No, not at all. I mean, that's complicated. But it's also, that's where you start realizing how how many options you've got. And you've got a lot of options when you're practicing. And all of it is fine. All of it's good if it's done mindfully. So picking up the mindfulness of breathing and then working with the different things that are relevant or meaningful or helpful or useful at that time, and then you can be adjusting and alternating or experimenting to see, okay, what works, what's helpful.
Yeah. Coming back to Jeet's question again too, it's coming up for me is like this whole idea that we're trying to, this idea like I want to make something happen, like nothing's happening. I've done this practice and then like it's not happening. It's supposed to happen. Like, it seems to me it's like stepping aside or tools for investigating experience.
Right, well, also, I mean, you can sort of see that feeling it's not happening or nothing's happening for me is our reaction to neutral feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, which is I should be getting somewhere. I should be getting something. I need to get something. I'm missing the point. But so that it's that neutral feeling is generating, because oftentimes certainly painful feeling is more dramatic. Pleasant feeling is definitely preferred. And then neutral feeling tends to not be investigated very well. And then that feeling of, especially if it's neutral, then, gee, something must be going, it's not happening, So then this is where, it's in that Majjhima 44, the questions and answers at Bhikkhuni Dhammadina, and is that the underlying tendency with pleasant feeling is toward greed or desire. The underlying tendency unpleasant feeling or a painful feeling is aversion, ill will, and then the underlying tendency for neutral feeling is delusion, sort of greed, lobha, dosa, moha are the root defilements, and then each of those different feelings has a particular tendency. They're not limited to that, but there tends to be a predominant tendency. For those particular states to arise out of that feeling.
Ajahn Sitchi Irvin has holistic awareness retreat that Tan Chun and Tan Pesa went to. There's this line, how do I get me some of that non-grasping stuff?
Yeah. Yes. We were talking just before we came over with Ajahn Kurundamaha. Ajahn Sujitta oftentimes has these wonderful sort of lines that are priceless. What was it with you? You tell me. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's not really. Yeah, but it is good.
Having Lumpa check my head for any blood spots. I remember a time when I was in Sushito, when I was a chick, it was my third panza, he came into the kitchen hallway. His head was just covered, the back was covered in blood. He said, Achana, it's all bloody, can I wipe that off? He said, yes. He said, do I look macho?
Priceless. Okay. Do you want to do the Honda Mail? Yeah.
Yeah.